Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. The Alchemy of Light broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And today we are broadcasting on a very auspicious day, I feel. This is the eighth day of the 10th lunation and the autumnal equinox here in the northern hemisphere, and we have a very special guest, somebody that I admire and respect with my whole heart, and it is such an honor to bring Mr. Alfred Lambermont Weber to all of us. Welcome, Alfred.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to the journey that will take over the next couple of hours.
Likewise, and a journey it is. Boy, for the listeners who may not be familiar with you and your work, I'd like to just offer a brief introduction in that you are an extraordinary Renaissance man, a genius of our time, in that your interests and accomplished studies and offerings to the world, all of that have quite a span that began in your study of law in the Yale University, continuing into your independent studies, which now brings you in the spotlight of exopolitics, the study of politics, government, and law in the universe. And anybody who'd like to learn more about your accomplishments and the amazing things that you are up to in making our world a better place can visit your website at exopolitics.com. And I would like to also pass this to you, Alfred. Is there something you would like to share in announcement, introduction of yourself at this time?
Not really. I mean, we have a whole number of ongoing projects, and one project that we're launching now is an educational entity called Exo University, and that's an ongoing educational entity in exosciences, Psi sciences, and exopolitics. And we have a few video classes up online now at our website, exouniversity.org. And we have, we're now engaging in the planning for a whole upgrade of Exo University and preparation for a 2013 academic year with a lot of exciting classes coming on there. And that's sort of our planning for what I call the positive timeline. There are almost two different, we live in a time-space hologram that's composed of multiple timelines. We actually live in an artificial construction, which is a time-space hologram, and that was a scientific discovery of DARPA's Project Pegasus about 40 years ago, back in the late 60s and early 70s. And so this is actually part of the fulfillment of this time of the integration of science and spirituality, because the spiritual point of view has always been that there is profound intelligence behind the design and operation of the multiverse. And now, in our time, science, specifically time science, is more and more confirming this. So we live in a very exciting time, and a time in which it's important not to succumb to memes. And by memes, I really mean sort of thought forms. Thought forms that are formed or that feed off various timelines that I've been able to identify in the course of my studies. And two of those timelines, just to make the point really clearly, are, number one, a catastrophic timeline, which we can talk about, and the other, a positive timeline. And they're almost like kiddie dope, you know. Prior to our program, I was making a kind of a survey of the memes. Memes are kind of thought forms, and the easiest way to absorb memes is by looking at the news or looking at social media, because most of what is produced in the news, even in the alternative news and on social media, the most prominent example of social media is Facebook, which now over 75% of North American users of the internet are members of Facebook. Well, Facebook was essentially designed by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, in implementation of the Department of Defense Total Information Awareness Program. And that is to penetrate information gathering and propagation of information control into the civilian population. So while Facebook, on the one hand, and other social media have allowed us to connect, they have provided the opportunity for enormous data mining of privacy and enormous injection of memes of the catastrophic timeline into the human population. So I noticed in our, you know, preparing for our program today, that one of the salient points that you'd like to go over is the issue of the catastrophic and the positive timeline. And in reviewing both of these, just in a superficial way, I found, here we have a world that's erupted apparently spontaneously, or part of the world erupting into violence over a 2-minute trailer that was produced by a former U.S. government informant. You know, and i.e., going down a catastrophic timeline of possible global war and destruction. And also, just in my perusal of the various groups on Facebook that deal with the approach of our dual sun, which they say may be a brown dwarf, people actually leaving groups because there's not enough fear-oriented material in that group. And so I've realized that the memes of fear have become like the latest last legal high, you know. And people are now glued as much glued to their media outlets, be it their cell phones, their laptops, their, you know, television or radios, or however they get that input, not only to receive what they think is information or upliftment, but to actually get injections of fear and apprehension, like a drug. And there's a whole level, Jamil, that we can talk, and we will today, about how these fears, you know, what the catastrophic timeline may bring over the next, you know, medium term, say 10 to 15 years, or what the positive timeline is, and what the dimensional shift of energy is, and of consciousness on the planet. And one of the real things that is occurring is that people around the planet, I believe, are more and more addicted or manipulated by adrenaline rushes that are triggered by information supplemented by hidden amplifiers in terms of now planetary electromagnetic mind control weapons that go in and affect the limbic systems of the brain, either on a footprint basis or a, you know, regional basis or an individual basis, that mood manage the entire population. So we actually live on this planet that is being mood managed all the time at the individual level, and we're dealing with addiction to emotions and emotion management. People talk about, oh, the drugs, you know, heroin and the cocaine and the Afghan war is really about protecting the opium crop for dope ink. And not really about, you know,
catch the terrorists today.
Yeah. Well, there is even a deeper truth, and that is that the whole industry of war, and even the reporting of news, and even the 17 installations of HAARP and all of the cell phone towers and all this array of electromagnetic weapons is about feeding the mood manipulation and the human addiction to moods, including fear. Because I actually, you know, found people, especially in kind of the Planet X area, that are not so much interested in the actual facts, but that have been taken over by what I call the Planet X meme, which is there's a thought form which is generated, which includes fear and terror, and which actually takes over the emotional body and of a people, and colors the entire reality perception. And I've realized that now, because the fields that I deal in as a futurist have to do with trying to communicate evidence and facts, but I realize that it's like sitting in one of the hats that I wear is as a graduate psychotherapist. And if you're sitting with a client in a session, you know, trying to prove something rationally to that client, when you're dealing with their inner emotions, kind of an I-thou basis, and that's what's coloring their whole view of reality, that's sort of a deeper level, and that's the level that I think that we're beginning to address now. I've been, you know, writing books and articles on Planet X now for 39 years. And are we on the positive and catastrophic timeline, and looking at all of that? And I realize that it doesn't matter what the facts are. Mm. It really doesn't matter to a large number of people what the facts are. What people have incarnated for may be for more emotional and spiritual awakening processes that are, and the facts of what's occurring are sort of incidental to these processes, i.e., it's not like incarnating into a crack house and getting crack or getting high on, junk. Yeah. It's incarnating into a fear factory and getting high on fear. Huh. If one chooses to lead an unawakened sort of fear life and to say, being very, very afraid of Planet X, we're finally coming to that phase where being hip and awake involves being very afraid of Planet X, whereas the whole thing may be a meme. Mm-hmm. And we can, spend the time here discussing certain aspects of as to why, from a time science point of view, which is what most people don't think about, Planet X may not affect us at all. That is, it'll be a non-event. It's kind of an event that just passes by. Having given that sort of an answer to your question, do you have any additional things that you'd like to say? I'm going to turn it back to you.
I actually understand what you're saying, and I've observed the example you gave in another story of the recent past, in the breaking of this tape from Romney and the his addressing his supporters, and there was the line that was broadcast and rebroadcast and rebroadcast about how he was claiming in this one sentence that 47% of his of the voters were people who didn't pay taxes. And I'm paraphrasing, but that particular line set off a huge amount of emotion and rage and division. And as I was observing my friends and observing the pundits and observing the presentation of that, I had the exact same observation. I was sitting there thinking, well, this is not about what he's saying, because whenever one of the commentators would try to expand the conversation, offer another opinion, another suggestion about the context of what he was saying, or other ideas that might have been connected to why he might have said that, or even the totality of the speech at all, they were immediately dismissed and cut off, and the focus went back to the divisive quality of him, dismissing 47% of the population, the Obama voters, as being non-taxpaying citizens, derelicts, all those things. And they really, really sat on that, really pushed on that. And that was the only place to go in the conversation. And I realized that there was an addiction. I used the same word. That was an addiction. I was watching the people watching it, and it was this collective agreement that we were going to sit here and be angry and be very divided and have our enemy, and that's what it's going to be. And there wasn't an interest in expanding the conversation. And these were intelligent people. This is not about any lack of ability to examine what is or isn't being said, or what is or isn't being offered in our space, in our astronomy, what is Planet X. In my research of Planet X, you know, I found that the history of Planet X started in the pre-Plutonian or Newtonian times when they were looking for the next planet after Neptune. And that is something else that I noticed, which is connected to the mind control that is going on, in that it's really much easier to mind control a population if we don't know our history. If we don't have any sense of what a term is connected to, then the memes are much easier to stick in our psyche when we are not balanced emotionally, which, you know, is where my focus with consciousness begins, in the emotional body, because perhaps we're just coming to realize that we're so much more than this thinking brain, you know, that the whole heart, the whole sensory, the whole emotional body perhaps is the dominant force here. It's an amazing shift, paradigm shift in our perception of ourselves. And I'm very interested in the understanding of how a meme actually becomes a creator in consciousness, you know, and then what happens when, say, Planet X and Nibiru and all these things that are feeding the catastrophic timeline, this idea that these planets are going to come and they're going to whack us and they're going to do all these things, and people will create that reality somehow, correct?
Yeah. One way, which perhaps is more objective, is to begin to approach the study of our reality from the point of view of time science, because what time science holds is that we are in a time-space hologram that is composed of multiple timelines, i.e. we're inside a virtual reality. And that, so we're inside a movie.
Mm-hmm. That's what you mean by that.
Yeah. And that by switching timelines is like switching channels or switching movies. The movie actually changes, and you're the same person, but the movie changes. And there are all sorts of time paradoxes. And I found that, from my point of view, both, you know, as a futurist, as a student of life and spirituality, of the meaning of life, as a student of exopolitics, which is the study of in intelligent relations among intelligent civilizations in the multiverse, I find the most productive way, or a very productive way, to study or to begin to understand reality is to study reality from the point of view of timelines, because that way you're not enmeshed in the Maya. You're not enmeshed in the phenomenology of reality. Mm-hmm. Rather, you're saying, okay, what movie am I in? And if I'm in a Cineplex, what's playing in the adjacent theaters, right?
Okay, and, more objective.
And how can I just move over to the next theater where I'm in this kind of horror movie, and can I go over into the next theater where an expansive, you know, visionary sci-fi movie is playing? I kind of like that one better, you know. It's a much softer landing, and all I have to do is move over to that one, and I can. So that's how I've been approaching the whole subject matter.
Okay.
Because because I approach things as a futurist, and because I've been fortunate enough to have been exposed to time science and to time travel through colleagues who have been in time travel programs, and myself, who have been the subject of time travel. I mean, my book has been time traveled by the U.S. CIA and Department of Defense, and I've been under time travel surveillance, you know, almost 40 years prior to my writing a book. You know, I was, you know, meeting with large groups of defense and CIA scientists who were giving, you know, looking at me because they had a copy of my book that I would write 30 years in the future. So it seems to me that that's a much more realistic, and that's the way that the advanced in ultra-dimensional extraterrestrial civilizations that we, that are concerned with our immediate environment, also deal with us. Have the fourth, even the predatory races. I mean, the fourth dimensional grays, be they predatory or be they kind of have sort of a scientific relationship with us, intrusive, but for their own interests, they relate to us outside of time and outside of our kind of Maya and drama, and they don't enmesh themselves in our drama. They kind of drop in from their dimensions into our particular, you know, whatever timeline, you know, we happen to be on, and they're sort of observing the whole thing, or trying to change conditions of our virtual reality here as well. And the same thing with the ultra-dimensionals. And our own relationship to the time-space hologram as as non-local members of a non-local civilization of intelligent souls who come from a dimension known as the interlife or the afterlife or the spiritual dimension, where in the interlife we kind of ponder what our various incarnations in this time-space dimension, which we can call the exopolitical dimension, are going to be. It's not as linear as that, because we can, from the non-local interlife, lead a number of lives simultaneously in the exopolitical dimensions. And then we come in through an interdimensional portal into this dimension and enmesh ourselves in these spacesuits that we call bodies, and have these, you know, experiences as Jamil or as Alfred, and for moral purposes to develop our souls on the way toward ultimately becoming the sort of being that can develop universes on our own, i.e. we're inside a huge creation for the development of souls into creator gods. So that's the business that's going on here. We're inside multiple an intelligent virtual reality, time-space dimension composed of multiple timelines, each one of which is a virtual reality. And to get enmeshed in or addicted to the fear, you know, factor of one particular reality, which is the program that is being run on Earth now, at least during these particular years, say, you know, 2012 to who knows when, is counterproductive. So what I did is to say, well, look, how can we begin to identify patterns here that can really serve us better and can liberate us from the basic programs that have been traditionally called karma, or have been under the control of negative entities, or under the control of a power matrix. How can I liberate myself from that? And the way to that, it seems to me, is to liberate oneself as much as possible from timelines, or from an identification with the third dimension of time-space.
How does one liberate themselves from the timeline reality and still understand their place as a human and the human contribution and the human function? How do you discern that? And how is the human species particularly impacted by the manipulation of fear and the manipulation of the HARP and the geoengineering technologies that are managing moods? In your words, how do we discern that we are capable of joining, we'll keep working with this dialogue, the dictionary of the extraterrestrial, the more advanced mind that can see objectively the timeline options that we have? How can we go into that and still understand our place as a human in this, that is born into this fear reality and then has this option to pop out of it? Do you understand what I'm asking? You know, how is being human involved in all this?
Yeah, well, those are key questions. And one way to approach that is to really begin to deconstruct what being human in this reality really means. And what being human means is, in essence, multidimensional. Mm-hmm. Because, first of all, the most essential part of us, which is our non-local human soul, mm-hmm. which is a human soul, is non-local, is located in the interlife. That is outside of the time-space dimension, although paradoxically embedded in the time-space dimension in our bodies. So the more that we are in touch with and conscious of our inner soul, then the more our inner consciousness is aware of and outside of time-space enmeshment. And we're in kind of an a place that is outside of time-space, which is our core soul. And so from that position, what occurs to us in terms of individual timelines and collective timelines will vary a great deal, because our collective timelines are like, say, lanes on a multiple lane highway. And by shifting lanes, one can actually shift the reality that one is in. And say, if you're looking at multiple lane multiple lane highways, say if you shift lanes toward the left, you could say that, for example, that the lanes toward the more left would be more catastrophic timelines, and the lanes more toward the right would be more positive timelines, so that the leftmost lane we would call hell on earth, and the rightmost lane we would call heaven on earth. Now, one can begin to manipulate one's own personal reality by being more aware and awake all the time, that and in touch with our inner soul, that is, by virtue of its essence, at all times non-local and non-locally anchored in the interlife, which is outside of the time-space virtual reality that we're in. We're inside a 3D reality. We're inside a 3D movie. That's about the size of it. One can project all of this meaning into it, but it is constructed around mind and constructed around the ego component of the mind. And mind is the etheric, mind is located in the etheric components of the human body. And so these are mechanisms. That's the mechanism into which one incarnates, i.e., okay, you're going to come in for this incarnation. We have a handy-dandy etheric, 13 chakra, 6 strand, or up from 2 strand. You're going to hit 3 to 4 strand DNA. At this time. I just have to signal somebody who's trying to reach.
Well, let me offer an example of a scenario that a person might experience, and using the example of an addiction or an addict. Yeah. Look at substance addiction. And in my substance addiction pattern, I see to the left of me, the catastrophic timeline to continue using my substance is going to continue to deteriorate my health and continue to deteriorate my relationships, continue to lessen my options for bettering my situation on all levels. I can see that. From my non-local observer, if I can access my non-local observer enough to tune into that in some clarity. Yeah. And then to the right, the positive timeline is going to take me through steps to liberate me from the addiction, and it's going to open more avenues for me to regain the sovereignty of my body and my life, etc. So that might be one example of a negative positive timeline on a very personal level, so people can start to access this idea of non-local consciousness, the non-local soul inside of us that gives us this broader, what I would call just simply a broader perspective of what our picture is. Because you're right, you know, when we're in the story, when we are using the substance and we are controlled by the substance because that's all we see, and we don't allow ourselves to take a step back or take a step up or have the opportunity to create an environment that supports that, then the drama is all there is. That is all that happens. That is the whole story, and there is nothing else. And
Right. And the biggest drug at this time, or the most widespread drug at this time, is fear. That's the drug that in this matrix reality is used as the controlling drug.
Well, World War III is probably the most paramount meme of fear that has impregnated my awareness, and it is one that I'm constantly aware of in dealing, healing, focusing on what I perceive are main players and what I perceive are opportunities to balance the fear in that through prayer, through activating my higher soul consciousness in a way that I would term a positive influence to balance that, because that World War III meme is the overshadow that I feel is sitting so heavy, and it's expressing itself on every level. To me, World War III is the mother of the geoengineering programs. It's the mother of the constant laws that are being passed that deny us the opportunity to feed each other, or, you know, all these things that constrict our ability to love, basically, in our own society. This, to me, it's all connected to this one huge fear meme that the world will never get along, that humans were born to be violent, and that's all that they're ever going to be. And, well, that's like the collective expression of this. And as a consciously contributing, you know, member of the human society who wants to affect a collective reality, where do you go with that?
Right, right. And that meme, which shows itself at multiple levels down through the fear of, you know, the fear of famine and starvation, or the fear of being without a roof over your head, or the fear of being without money on, you know, or the fear of being without employment, or the fear of being without a safety net. All of these are manipulated and contrived on this planet. In fact, we live in a safe and abundant universe that gives us everything we want and need. But on this planet, the Matrix powers use all of the technology. So, I mean, war is an industrial activity, which is controlled by the Matrix powers, by controlling both sides of the war in order to profit off of it. And the same, I mean, World War I, World War II were planned a long time in advance by this Matrix power acting on behalf of predatory fourth dimensional, that is outside of time space, extraterrestrial entities. This is just basic exopolitics. The Draco reptilians and the Orion Greys, in concert with, in their rollout, then the power matrix on this planet, which is controlled by you know, there are many, many different adjectives that can be used, in, you know, bloodline monarchies and banking families that come down from, you know, the Anunnaki elite going back 250,000 years ago. You know, that that kind of thing is what keeps this game perpetually going. So World War III is just another industrial activity. And so the issue is, what timelines, what is the timeline 2012 to 2025 going to be? Will it be a catastrophic timeline with a Planet X coming in that will have a global coastal event. That global, that cataclysmic timeline is one in which Earth is hit by, quote, destructive solar flares, large meteors, tsunamis, worldwide coastal inundations, mega catastrophe. Humanity suffers massive depopulation with as few as 500 million human beings remaining, and society is reduced to a dysfunctional new world order of an elite, a global police state, and a technocratic servant class. Okay? So that's like the mega catastrophe timeline, and then there are variations in between of, you know, mass starvation or World War III, and all of these are engineered catastrophic timelines because they serve this elite that draws its power from negative interdimensional sources that have gotten their power by rebelling against or by separation from source, you know, over long eons of time, and that feed off of negative ultra-dimensional extraterrestrials. So they're interested in creating the negative timeline and can go anywhere along those extremes. At the same time, there's a positive timeline in 2012 to 2025, and that's like in the adjacent Cinemax theater to the horror movie that I just talked about, and that's where Earth is set on a gradual setting of a potential to reach an advanced utopian planet status, a virtual Garden of Eden. So these are actually two virtual realities that are playing next to each other on a next to each other on adjacent timelines. And so what I did as a futurist was over the course of 39 years to investigate each of these. And so that we now have some objective measure of, you know, what's going to happen here? What's really, you know, in 2012 to 2025, are we on the cataclysmic timeline? Are we on something in between, or are we on the positive timeline? Which theater are we in? And this is different from on collective timelines. You have then the issue of the personal timeline, which is, I think, is what you and I were talking about just immediately prior to this, and that is how one can adjust one's personal timeline. And that's what advanced yogis have always done. And that is, oh, I'm just going to adjust my timeline to where I'm in a different virtual reality, or I'm in the virtual reality that's most beneficial to me, even though I'm in this timeline. You know, by being, by doing things that are most of most benefit to one, being closest to source, and being ultimately most in touch with the non-local aspect of our non-local intelligent soul, which is embedded within our body and within our etheric body, which has come in through the interdimensional portal into this time-space hologram. And I think it's important that, that we language it this way, because we're describing the time science and physics reality of what's occurring in these incarnations.
Now, go ahead.
So, that's, so I kind of want to pause there and let you take the conversation where you want to take it from there.
Well, I agree with the importance of developing a new language for a new way of exploring the paradigm that we are co-creating. I might surmise to suggest that our accepting the responsibility of our multidimensional capacity in our human form, our chosen human form, the form that as souls we have chosen to incarnate here and become proactive players in our earth-based reality, the more we're able to integrate the bigger picture, the bigger understanding, and become more integrated and activated as the soul in the body, I believe that is the manifestation of heaven on earth, because we will literally be bringing the heavens, the universe of our reality, of our person, of our connection to all that is into our everyday lives in this mechanism that is available to us. And it used to be perhaps that yogis did this, but I feel that we're moving also in a new paradigm that we are all yogis. We all have the capacity to make those choices for ourselves, and whatever level we're at, whether we're dealing with the addiction in our own very personal way, or whether we're in a place where we're able to be more active in the non-local area and have a sense of the bigger picture, wherever we're at, I don't personally believe there's any better or worse way to do this. I feel like every person, exactly where they're at, choosing to cultivate this non-local, this soul connection, this understanding of the fact that life is their choice without any adjectives, good or bad or horrible or any of that. It's a choice that the individual makes. And starting from that place of responsibility, it then becomes much more interesting on certain levels to look at the challenges that we have co-created in our lives and see what we're going to do with it. And the new dictionary is really, really important, because we are exploding out of the material-based reality one way or another. I mean, even the material-based scientists can't keep up with themselves anymore. It's just too much, you know? Which is fascinating, and I really do want to touch in a very grounded way about some of our earth changes. Now, we have a lot of earth changes going on, but I am very interested in learning more from you and sharing your knowledge about what is this meme. We understand now that the meme construct of the Planet X or the Nibiru, you know, this impact of creating massive global changes is in the negative timeline, meaning that it's going to be destructive to many lives and all that. And also, I believe there is something else that is really worth exploring in the new understanding of our sun not being the lone soldier in the cosmos, the possibility of our sun actually being part of a binary system and having a twin sun companion, I think is a really interesting new body of science that is grounded in our new understanding of the universe. And I'm very interested in hearing your thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, basically, in our galaxy, about a third of the solar systems are binary solar systems. So that, you know, it's not that unusual. It's actually a third to a half of the solar systems from the figures that I've read are binary solar systems. Now, the issue is assuming that our solar system is one of the third to a half, that is a binary solar system, what can we say about our twin sun? Mm-hmm. And there you have a kind of a what I would call a spectrum of learning and opinion. Along one end of the spectrum that says, yes, we're in a binary system, you have scholars and experts like Walter Cruttendon, who's written the book Lost Star of Myth and Time, and Andy Lloyd, who's written the book Dark Star, referring to Planet X. And both of those people say that we have binary star. Walter Cruttendon says we have a binary star, comma, and it is not necessarily a brown dwarf star, and is not necessarily threatening us, and it is at quite a distance. Andy Lloyd, who's a researcher, says that the last time that our binary system star came into the solar system and did any damage was 3 billion years ago. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a whole sector of opinion that says, and these are bunched up to everything that all of the testaments and all of the symbolism is really all about Planet X. And it is at great extreme. And this is what I call the Planet X meme. Okay? To where Noah's Ark was about Planet X. To where Exodus and the locusts was about Planet X. And to where, part of what I've been doing as a futurist is to go out and to deconstruct these concepts, because I think that they're concepts that are part of the same power matrix that produces constant fear. It's part of the fear drug machine that has brought us World War One and Two. That creates a planet of war, disease, crime, and poverty. I.e., rather than a paradise planet, fear is used to create a planet of war, disease, crime, and poverty, and the reason for that is that the predatory extraterrestrial races that control the controllers of the power matrix, their payoff is human fear. They live on the fear of human souls. In some cases, they live on human souls, but they live on the fear of human souls. And so we are in a planet, in a dimension, the catastrophic timeline, the negative timeline here, what's playing in this movie theater, or has been for the last X number of thousand years, is a movie. This planet is dedicated toward having a population of captive human souls that are set up by their controllers at the power matrix and also at the negative fourth dimensional ETs to create the maximal amount of fear and suffering as food for these reptilian and gray races. So that's what our horror movie has been about, and why the horror movie seems to go on and on and on, millennia after millennia after millennia.
Mm.
And we have incarnations of sages, of the Buddha. We have incarnations of creator sons of God, like the Christ. And these are sort of in terms of the cosmic drama, they can be seen as part of the universe administration, liberation of the planet after a rebellion or a capturing of this quadrant of the galaxy by an interdimensional satanic or very negative force. So that's kind of what's going on here at the exopolitical level as to why things are so negative here. Now, in some ways, this is a positive.
Mm.
Why? Because we souls who get our ticket punched here in incarnations, we get a lot of womp from incarnating here. We get a lot of soul development from lifetime or lifetimes of incarnating on Earth. We come out as extremely hardy souls, really good ones, lots of development. So we advance our universe careers and our development of souls on our path toward creatorship and small g godship on our own. Did I communicate that?
Very clearly. So would it be then, perhaps I'm interested in a couple of things. Now I'm interested in exploring how our mission is connected then to the planet itself, and the planet itself as a sovereign being who is a co-creator in this. You know, this Earth has hosted this fourth dimensional, this is part of the galaxy that has been, and I want to recommend your book right now, Exopolitics, because this is right out of that book, and it's a very good read, and it's a very or a possibility going on here. And so if this part of the galaxy has been quarantined because of the invasion of this malevolent, we'll just use that word, conglomerate of entities that has chosen to usurp life force rather than become part of life force and is now manipulating all forms of energy in its natural state to be able to live its own reality, then we have a part as co-creators to do beyond ourselves. We have something for the planet as well, right?
Yes, yes. I.e., we're on a biosphere, and we're in a noosphere, and the planet itself is an entity that is also existing inside timelines, and is also going through dimensional shifts, as are we. So this is a multi-dimensional processes. The universe itself is a living entity. The galaxy is, we are inside living entities of the galaxies that are living entities inside the universe, which is a living entity inside the multiverse, which is a living entity. And the solar system, the interdimensional portal into the solar system is the sun. The sun is a living entity and was considered by many to be the local god. And so that's why you have sun worship. And Gaia is a sovereign being and a super consciousness. And however, we're in an afflicted solar system. and on an afflicted planet because of the default and the rebellion and the various incursions that we've had on this quadrant of the galaxy, which have to do with deep dramas and the whole issue of free will in this galaxy, free will even in non-local realities such as spiritual dimensions where we're created. We know from a scientific and parapsychological point of view from over 7,000 cases of hypnotic regression of soul memories from the interlife that human souls are created from almost a what we can call almost kind of an assembly line way. I mean, we're kind of created in big scales, and to use an analogy, we're created from a sea of light, and that sea of light is a metaphor for source, or what's called God or source. But all of these terms are inadequate, and human souls are eggs of God from the sea of light. Eggs of light from the sea of light, i.e. we're holographic fragments. Okay. So that one of the principles of the hologram is that the whole is in each part of the hologram. Mm-hmm. So each of our souls is a fragment of the whole sea of light, but it means that each of our souls is actually the whole of God, and it, because it's part of the holographic part, the whole sea of light. So that's why you hear people say, Namaste, I salute the God within you, and that's literal. When we speak the one to the other, we're not only speaking soul to soul, we're speaking God to God, and that's literal because our souls are holographic fragments of God, of source. And terms like God, source, you know, are all inadequate.
I agree.
From the parapsychological point of view, which is how science investigates it, as opposed to faith, which comes from religious texts, spiritual texts, which may have come from revelation, but you know, may or may not have errors in them.
Mm-hmm.
There, we now have more science-based knowledge of the nature of source or of God. And by science knowledge means using the scientific method, which is where you have a standard scientific protocol and replicable results. That's kind of the basic framework of the scientific method, which then can become official knowledge. That's sort of how our kind of replicable knowledge, reliable knowledge, as opposed to reveal knowledge, or as opposed to faith or belief, knowledge based on belief. Now, We're in the era in which spirituality and science is coming together, i.e., mainly spirituality has been in the area of beliefs in this dimension, based on ancient religions, ancient texts, revelations, which in many cases exopolitics teaches us are extraterrestrials. Many of the world's religions were actually founded by manipulatory extraterrestrials or ETs who founded the religion, not anything particularly spiritual, or ETs on a spiritual mission. If you look at the Old and the New Testament, they're actually mainly exopolitical documents, extraterrestrial documents, rather than, quote, spiritual documents. And they're talking mainly about extraterrestrials. And it was about 6,000 years ago with the Sumerians that the extraterrestrials became gods. And they were ETs. They were actually ETs who said, you know, I am, you know, I am this god, and you shall have no other gods. You shall have no other gods before me. That does not mean monotheism. The common misconception is that Judaism founded monotheism. They didn't. They founded the choosing of one god over many gods, of Yahweh, who was actually an extraterrestrial. So, and they said, oh, we'll choose Yahweh over a bunch of other gods. You know, say in the Egyptian kind of system, which was multiple gods.
Right.
And, you know, the burning bush. All of this were, you know, Mormons are really a flying saucer cult, you know, with the angel Moroni. I, moron, Moroni. I mean, all of these are known ET. These extraterrestrials are really mischievous, and they set up human religions for purpose of causing, of setting up conflict on the planet. And so that's why we have a little two-minute trailer that is now being manipulated by the Matrix power controllers into trying to start World War III, where, you know, anywhere from one-third to two-thirds of the planet will be conflagrated if that's allowed to go forward. I mean, it's all of this is a machine. The Earth has been a machine for the creation of fear, and fear-based souls for the nourishment of negative spiritual entities and negative dimensional ETs. So now parapsychology, which is based on science, on standard methodologies and replicable results, is beginning to bring us a picture of what the human soul is. And it's a holographic fragment of God. And it's beginning to bring us a picture of, you know, accurate pictures of what the interlife is like and what the process of the considerations of incarnating into new lives is like, and what life review goes, and how clusters of souls incarnate, and how all the phenomenology that we experience in our daily lives, what that really is about, and how we process that in the interlife, because everything that we experience inside this virtual reality, which is all relative, it's not absolute, it's just a virtual reality, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. Now, it is designed by high intelligence, so you think that it's really real, okay? But in the interlife, you do life review, and, you know, your son from the last lifetime may have killed you in this lifetime, okay? Literally. And it's kind of set up that way because the perspectives are radically different from the perspectives that are set up, especially in this planet, which is based on duality consciousness. Duality consciousness is I win, you lose. Mm. Unity consciousness is we are one. Mm. And we are now just beginning the era of unity consciousness, which is the era of the positive timeline. And that's what the Mayan calendar was all about. The Mayan calendar is really a map of human consciousness and of how humanity makes its way out of duality consciousness into unity consciousness. And the end of the Mayan calendar, which some people say happened in 2011, and you know, there are all these different dates, is all about the interdimensional portal at the core of the universe that we're in, broadcasting waves of unity consciousness, which then get transduced into the interdimensional portal in the billions of galaxies in our universe, down into the interdimensional portals in each of the solar systems, billions of solar systems in each galaxy, which are the suns, and then into each of our minds, which are like transducers. And some of our minds can, you know, are more receptive toward unity consciousness, so we go through this more easily, and we are actually broadcasting the positive timeline more easily. Others pick up unity consciousness, and for them it's cataclysmic, because it's the end of duality consciousness. It's the end of all they know, which is I win, you lose, because I win, you lose is destroyed in a reality that is only broadcasting we all are one. So that's kind of the processes that are happening now, along with everything else. And these are some of the deeper levels of the virtual reality incarnation soul machine that is ongoing now. And there are all sorts of highways and byways, you know, some gray extraterrestrial species, you know, deal with souls, and, you know, and people, you know, actually lose their souls, and there's a whole area of learning that we're just discovering now in exopolitics as to the exopolitics of the intelligent civilization of souls. And before, in one of the functions of religions was the care of your soul, and that's a really important function, and that's why religions were so important. Well, now science can begin to take that over, because the care of your soul is like, you know, it's a branch of healthcare in a certain way, but like the healthcare of the interlife and of relationship to God. I mean, you know, and many of what the religion state is reality is based on political decisions, because religions are more political and economic and sociological organizations that say, well, oh, it's 325 AD and we're going to outlaw reincarnation because we can keep people under better control that way. That has nothing to do with the scientific fact that we live in a reality in which you're reincarnating it into. And that's what the Christian world did, you know, at a particular time for political purposes.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
In the conversation just two paces back or so, where the broadcast from the universe changed to unity consciousness, how is that going to impact the ongoing, or the game of the extraterrestrial, the malignant extraterrestrial, the dominance of the fourth dimensional species on this planet and throughout this quadrant of the galaxy? How is this impacting them? Is this, and how will this manifest in our ability to recognize the game is over, in a sense. You hit on the fact that some of us are going to be very open and easy with that. Others are going to have a harder time with that. But in the bigger picture, with the extraterrestrial component and that exopolitical component, how do you see that manifesting in our world?
That's a very good question. I would speculate that is part of why the Draco Reptilian and Orion Gray timelining, their attempted timeline for takeover of Earth and Mars, and sort of this quadrant here for some time between 2000 and 2050 is failing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of these cosmic forces.
Yeah.
That is, everything, we're inside a living organism, and it's all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And you can conceive of, in fact, the Mayan consciousness was that the energy coming through the galactic interdimensional portal. They didn't even think of the interdimensional portal at the core of the universe, but just the core of a galaxy. They call Unabku, which is the mother of creation. That's like the mind of God. That's like the cosmic mind.
Mm.
So what we have to do as humans, or, you know, a very wise choice, is to constantly be in touch with these universal frequencies and broadcasts. What is the galactic mind? What is the universal mind? What are the frequencies of the universe consciousness? For example, the author Barbara Hand Clow, in her book, The Mayan Code, takes my book and showed my book Exopolitics, which you mentioned earlier, and shows my book Exopolitics was written in 1999, and she shows how it fits in perfectly with the Mayan calendar as a map of human consciousness. What the Mayan calendar is a map of the mind of God, and it's a map of human consciousness. So that in 1999, according to this interpretation of the Mayan calendar, is where the broadcasts start going towards things galactic, and how relations among intelligent civilizations in the universe are, you know, function. And that's when everybody began to get interested in big time in UFOs and all the, you know, all this kind of stuff. Well, 1999, according to this scheme, was the year in which what's called the galactic underworld started, and that's Mayan scholar Dr. Carl Johan Kalman's interpretation of the Mayan calendar. 1999 was the year in which I wrote Exopolitics. So it means that my inner soul, my being, my mind was tuned into the broadcast coming through the interdimensional portal, the galactic portals, the solar portals, and I then downloaded that and manifested it in this dimension as the book Exopolitics, providing the science of the relation among intelligent civilizations in the multiverse, because that science provides an interface and is a mechanism for moving off the catastrophic timeline and off the matrix, the power matrix that has had us, you know, enslaved inside this horror picture into a positive timeline. And it's just because I'm connected to Source. And that's a model for how people can function. That's my point.
Hmm. I understand.
And it's not that I'm tooting my own horn here. I'm just repeating what authors say about my work.
Well, you can toot your horn and be repeating at the same time, and it's really okay because it's a fantastic example for all of us, Alfred, that you toot your horn because you say, look, guys, this is the way it can be. You don't have to be this way. It's an option. I'm not better than you for being this way. But look, this is actually an option. This exists. You can create a reality where you are tuned in to the galactic, to the universal pulse, and it can manifest in your life. And that is such a great gift to all of us. So I have another question. The conversation about how we're all going to deal with the change to unity consciousness. And I would like to use the example of the monetary system. The monetary system has been clearly introduced by a malevolent force that has divided all of us, has recreated our understanding of value, of sharing of personal dignity, of all of these things, you know, how people sell out for a dollar and all those things. But the system itself, in my perception, to bring in unity consciousness must be overhauled and must be realigned to unity consciousness. And I wonder if you've had any thoughts about how, just looking at that example, how the monetary system can make this transition in a way that is going to allow the maximum enhancement of all who are now participating in it, which is the vast majority of life, human and non-human, because the humans impact the entirety of life's inhabitants, and we're coming to that in our unity consciousness understanding, of course. But I wonder if you have any thoughts about how we might participate also in how this monetary system can become a proper manifestation of unity and support all life from the place where it's at now.
No, that's a very key question and insight also. And there's a lot of, opinion and research, as you stated, that the monetary system here on Earth comes from predatory extraterrestrial races. From the Anunnaki race that 280,000 years ago landed on this planet, and for the purposes of, number one, beginning to appropriate and export our gold to its planet, and number two, to dumb down Homo sapiens, who had been designed as the 12-strand DNA light being in the third dimension, an extraordinary invention or development or being designed by a consortium of upper-dimensional, ethical, human extraterrestrials. And so the Anunnaki were the first predators, and we actually went to Adam's calendar, thanks to Michael Tellinger, in South Africa. You can go to Exopolitics TV, and we have a film there called Occupy Adam's Calendar. This is where it all began, and where the exploitative Anunnaki Illuminati exploitative hierarchy began, and all of the power matrix, all of the monarchs and bankers and governments are all sort of a legacy from the Anunnaki ETs. And the pharaohs, were their descendants. I mean, the reason why the Egyptian pharaohs have those conical hats that they wear is because they were conads. They have the kind of elongated skulls, and that's what the Anunnaki ETs had. So there's reasons for all of this. And so looking at it now, and it's funny because I'm a Gemini, and Castor and Pollux are the two twins of Gemini, and they're experts in crossing borders and banking. So as an international lawyer and exopolitician, I've created the vision for an exopolitical universal future where planet Earth becomes part of the United Federation of Life-Bearing Planets, where we actually begin to join that, and we are liberated from this occupation, this now occupation by predatory extraterrestrial and human controllers, a human controller class that has gone on for at least 280,000 years. But also, that's, one side of the Castor and Pollux. The other side is that they're expert in crossing borders, but also in banking, which is your whole question. And I did start out my career as a Wall Street lawyer in the largest international Wall Street law firm. We represented foreign governments, central banks, all that kind of thing. So I kind of cut my eye teeth on that. On that kind of mechanism, knowing how it worked at the detail level. And I've written a paper that you can get online that's widely quoted called Seven Steps to Transform the World Financial System. And this is kind of an interim step toward a planet that functions much more on a telepathic and exchange of consciousness and energy way, and that is to create money. Well, first there's one of the core steps is the abolition of the Federal Reserve System. It was the implementation in 1913 of the U.S. Federal Reserve System, a manipulation by the Rothschild family, one of the bloodline families in the city of London, now worth $250 trillion, who are responsible, directly responsible, through the Federal Reserve for World War I, World War II, and now they're trying to get World War III off the ground. And the 13 bloodline families there, those families, obviously operate at the level of, I call them, and I am a judge on the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, and I'm a war crimes judge, and they operate at the level of crimes against peace, genocide, and crimes against humanity, and will be and should be judged appropriately in this dimension. I mean, very appropriately. And,
absolutely.
So that a first step is the dismantling of the Federal Reserve System, which has crippled the 20th century and which eviscerated the United States and most of the world economies. Every U.S. dollar is, in essence, beneficially the property of the Rothschild family. And that's a statement that can be supported because all of the banks that own the Federal Reserve are beneficially owned by the Rothschild family. And all of the U.S. dollars, the U.S. Treasury has the power to create its own currency, and instead it borrows money from the Rothschild family at exorbitant rates, and that has been so since 1913. So the entire planet and the U.S. people are put into perpetual debt. So that's a very easy step, but beyond that, it's the concept of money, you know, as an intermediate state, transforming money into a public utility like water or electricity, you know, to where if you need money to start your business, well, you just go down and you get money and it's free. And the redistribution of wealth. If we took all of the wealth now, which has been accrued through corruption and through war crimes by these families, you know, starting at $250 trillion and above, every person on this planet would be a billionaire. And every person on this planet is competent to be an extraordinary creator, Mm-hmm. And so on the positive timeline where we don't have wars going and where we're not being depopulated through HARP, through GMOs, through wars, through depleted uranium, through all these toxic substances, and we are all billionaires born into being billionaires. That's just the common condition where we go about creating the paradise planet. It's just turning this whole thing around. So it's some very simple, changes. And yeah, the term is called redistribution. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And money as a public utility. And every person a billionaire. And all of these things are relatively simple. And it is the world controller class that are off the radar. They're beyond the billionaires. They're beyond the simple trillionaires into the, you know, mega trillionaires, the quadrillionaires. And up into the reptilians that are controlling this. So we have to deconstruct and dismantle that. And that can happen. That is possible. It may not look like it's possible because it looks like we're in a horror movie. But if one connects to one's non-local reality and shit, and look at the timeline that is really happening, not the timeline of memes that are being projected onto someone. We're actually in that positive meme. So that's my case.
Now, the bloodline families and the connection to the extraterrestrials, I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on that. The families themselves, are they the extraterrestrials, you know, in regard to say some of David Icke's work, you know, the shapeshifters, and what is there really, are some of them the extraterrestrial shapeshifters? Are they mostly just largely receptive to the manipulation? What sets these particular 13 families in this position of dominance in the connection with the extrapolitical reality?
Think of it as all of the above. All of the above. Let's take one of the premier bloodline families, which is the Merovingian bloodline family, which is most of the world's monarchies. And let's take one of the leading Merovingian bloodline families, the House of Windsor, where the reigning Windsor monarch owns 26% of the landmass of the planet. And in that 26% are the world's uranium reserves, and that's why we have nuclear weapons, and that's why we have the nuclear power industry, is to provide that monarch and her City of London Rothschild cohorts with enrichment and also with the means toward depopulating the human race through nuclear weapons testing with its atmospheric pumping ionizing radiation into the atmosphere, through depleted uranium weapons. That's what all these wars are about. Where right now there are over 1 million U.S. soldiers that have served in the Gulf region since 1991 that are on permanent disability, where the ionizing radiation from depleted uranium weapons that were used in Central Asia, in Iraq and Afghanistan, it takes about 2 weeks to reach the North American continent, and that's why we have diabetes, autism, all of these illnesses to nuclear power plants and the HAARP radiation false flag operation using the Stuxnet virus at Fukushima of March 11, 2011, where 10 times the radiation at Chernobyl was intentionally set off into the northern hemisphere, and then using the weather warfare capabilities of HAARP, circulated around, especially over the North American continent, and rained down onto the North American continent for purposes of depopulation and weakening so that the New World Order could be rolled out. We have a power matrix that is now, because they're forming, they're following, you know, the catastrophic timeline that has been going on for 280,000 years. That's the only formula that they know how to follow, because that's the interdimensional satanic negative entities formula, because they you know, rebelled against the sort of the source-oriented nature of the multiverse, and brought in all these negative, attracted all of these negative predatory extraterrestrials to this quadrant here. It's the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. So we are collectively are awakened starseed souls, and walk-ins and others, you know, and indigos and crystal children have now collectively landed to help bring the planet over into a positive timeline, to switch theaters in the Cineplex, to use that analogy, although it's much more complex than that.
Mm-hmm. In the conversation then of the extraterrestrial connection to these bloodline families, is it reasonable then to assume that they, and it was mentioned earlier in the interview as well, that their plans themselves aren't following through? On some level, I feel inclined to, it's very important to educate myself and have an understanding that, you know, just when you say things like they own 26% of the landmass, my inner being just goes blank. Because it's completely not possible
to own the planet. Figure from a 500-page book that was just published last year that establishes that fact. And that...
Well, but the point isn't about that fact, and I believe that fact, but the fact is that in the bigger picture, in the natural order, in, you know, the law of the multiverse, if I might be so bold, is that it's not possible to own any part of the planet. Nobody owns the planet. The absurdity of that is becoming paramount, it seems to me.
Within the constitutional and legal systems of this particular planet, and the control matrices, that's how the control matrix has worked it out, where they have title and control as defined to that part of the landmass of the planet and to its mineral rights. And so... That is the daunting part of the task that we have, And that's why I feel privileged at having been educated at one of the finest law schools and, you know, gone to the finest legal firms, international legal firms, and being a judge and having taught in the economics and government departments of some of the leading universities, so that at the level at which this control mechanism exercises its control, I understand that and I'm conversant with that, so that I can then come up with and propose 7 steps to transform this system and come up with concepts like money as a public utility and understand what the function of redistribution is, which should be the rallying cry, or a rallying cry of the new era.
Absolutely. And, you know, I feel that the beginning has already started, and the rallying cry is perhaps started by the growing awareness of the bottom dropping out of the old system, which is the gift of our time as well. And even in these mean possibilities, or the possibilities of a planetary disruption, because one thing that I've noticed really clearly with whether it's a geoengineered storms, the impact of them is a very real phenomena in the 3-4-D reality where we're all working this out. So even then, though, the opportunity presents itself for us to address the situation and make new decisions. And as you've repeated, and I think it's so worth repeating over and over, the opportunity to go to the non-local part of our being, to our soul being, whatever you call it, and begin to develop an understanding of this choice that we have to be in this movie that is playing death and destruction, or the movie of equanimity and sovereignty and equal distribution for all. I love that image of everybody being born billionaires. Why not, you know?
Yeah. That's a much better movie than the movie that we're in now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I do believe we're getting there. I do. And bless your heart, Alfred. We are getting really close now. This 2 hours has had its own mind, as people probably perceive that it might, and we've got about 10 minutes left. So I want to catch our breath here and refocus on how our closing thoughts might be, to really summarize and bring this into a way that could be really useful. You know, we have a lot of really great ideas, and they are. And then how do they play out in our 3-4-D reality that can help us really bring them home, literally, you know?
Well, where we started in our conversation today was with the concept of emotions, negative emotions such as fear, and being controlled by negative emotions, and fear as a drug. And then we got into the control matrix using fear as a principal drug in this dimension that we're in. And then we introduced the concept of timelines. And looking at the time-space hologram and time science as the new way of perceiving our reality, time science is the new discovery. It's been secret for 40 years, but because of whistleblowers like Andrew Bishago and others, and because of the work that we're doing at Exopolitics, making it public, it is the new liberating science of the 21st century. So our message is, you know, come to the new liberating perspectives and science of the 21st century, which are the perspectives of time science and the understandings that we're in a time-space hologram, and all of the integrations that comes with with the kind of dimensional ecology of the multiverse. What we've been talking about is the dimensional ecology of the multiverse. And one of the books that I now have underway, I've completed the first draft of it, and it'll be out in the next couple of years, is called Dimensions, the Ecology of the Multiverse. And that has informed most of our conversation, or a good part of our conversation today. And that is the insights of how time science and the explorations of parapsychology into what traditionally have been areas of religion, the interlife, the afterlife, souls, have really laid wide open the nature of the reality that we're in and how we are no longer at the mercy of the memes and realities created, attempted to be created for us by the controllers, either human or negative interdimensionals, satanic and otherwise, or negative extraterrestrials, reptilian, Orion Grays. And just becoming aware of this, I really urge people to go to exopolitics.com to start becoming more aware of this new science. And you know, it's hard to say not to, but to eschew, to avoid becoming enmeshed in all the fear memes and just realize, you know, like, oh, the war is coming, oh, the sky is falling. This has been going on for hundreds of thousands of years, that the controllers just have been using this dimension to generate fear, because that's the business they're in, and serving up fear to their interdimensional reptilian overlords. So we're at the end of this game, and that's part of our job, which is to announce that and to help end it.
Would you say I think it's really important in this conversation, a couple of things. One is that science needs a new image altogether. And I don't know that we'll go there right now, but I just really want to support this approach in being part of science becoming healed in our understanding, because science hasn't really been the friend of humanity, especially in the last century, in a lot of ways. But it does have potential to be an effective bridge between spirituality and the scientific, what we have come to understand. It does have that potential when it integrates our multidimensional reality, which is what I'm hearing you say when you say science. It's the whole picture of science.
You know, that's an excellent point. We just had a couple of minutes.
I know,
when I say science, I don't mean the science of the controllers, the 3D science that they control in their universities of the controllers, which is how to produce death and how to put people in boxes. I mean the science of Exo University. Go to exouniversity.org, which is the science of exosciences, psi sciences, and exopolitics. And that's what I mean by sciences of the new paradigm.
Thank you. That was really important to clarify, because I really feel that this is part of how we're going to heal our consciousness. This is part of the healing of our dictionary, of our understanding. And, okay, Alfred, dear soul, wow, we are coming into the final minutes, 2 minutes of our program. I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your wisdom with all of us. This has been a very, very interesting and helpful dialogue. We've gone a lot of miles in this dialogue, and I really, really appreciate you coming here on the Alchemy of Light broadcast and sharing this with us. And I also want to thank all the ancestors that brought us here, all the pioneers of consciousness and throughout the millenniums who have made this possible and who are with us now at this time when we do have choices that we can make to become part of our healing consciousness. It is such an awesome time to be alive. And thank you to all the spirit beings that are also with us and have been joining us, both friend and foe alike. We love you all. So that is my final thank you. Do you have a really quick word? And then I'll do the final sign off.
Well, you know, in that spirit of gratitude, I'm very grateful that you asked me onto your program today, and that we were able to share the insights and that we have so freely. And I feel that we have contributed powerfully to the positive timeline today.
Yay. Well, thank you, Alfred. And thank you to all the listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this ride. And we will be signing off now. I am Jamil Graham, your host. You can follow me a bit more on alchemyoflight.org. And do take care of yourselves and take good care of each other. Until next time. Bye-bye.